The fiscal cliff isn't the only end-of-year deadline in Washington.
Make it a working lunch. Listen to the Marketplace Midday Update podcast for the day's top business headlines. Subscribe on iTunes or at marketplace.org/podcasts.
From APM in New York, good morning. I'm Jeremy Hobson. Members of Congress will be back at work today looking for a deal. There is just about a month left until we reach the fiscal cliff of spending cuts and tax increases. But there's another end-of-year deadline that hasn't gotten the same attention, and it could cost millions of Americans their unemployment benefits. Marketplace's David Gura reports.
It used to be you could get unemployment insurance for just 6 months. During the recession, Congress extended that to a maximum of 99 weeks. That and subsequent extensions have cost the federal government an additional $384 billion. James Ziliak teaches economics at the University of Kentucky.
And that is due both to the extended length of time that people could receive, but mostly due to the fact that there were just so many Americans who fell into unemployment.
Last month, the Labor Department said 5 million Americans have been jobless for more than 6 months. The current extension expires at the end of December, and if Congress doesn't renew it, more than 2 million of those Americans will be unable to collect unemployment insurance. Matt Friedman is an economics professor at Cornell University.
Obviously, many of these people continue to try to find jobs, and I have no doubt that they will continue to try to find jobs even in the absence of any sort of unemployment insurance benefits.
They may have to do that with a lot less help. In Washington, I'm David Gura for Marketplace.
In Cleveland, the staff of the local newspaper The Plain Dealer is bracing for big changes, perhaps something like what happened to the New Orleans Times-Picayune, which recently cut back its print publication to just 3 days a week and laid hundreds of employees off. The Cleveland Plain Dealer journalists are trying to get ahead of any cuts and get the public on their side, as Marketplace's Dan Bobkoff reports.
There are billboards appealing to save the Plain Dealer, a petition drive, and endorsements from local heroes like celebrity chef Michael Simon.
To go to 3 days a week for our paper, for our Cleveland Plain Dealer, that's a recipe for disaster.
Someone even wrote a theme song for the protest movement.
The Plain Dealer every day.
For the journalists at the Plain Dealer, this is their preemptive strike. Instead of waiting for bad news from their parent company, Advanced Publications, they're trying to build a community outcry on the front end. They know what change looks like in the company's other cities like New Orleans. Big job cuts and a focus on the web in place of daily print publication.
If you have half the reporters, they're asking half the questions, they're writing half the stories.
Rachel DeSell is a Plain Dealer reporter involved in the effort. This is personal. They're trying to save their own jobs, but they also think this is bad business.
How do you not put out a shoddier product? And if you put out a shoddier product, how do you get people to stick with it?
Advanced Publications didn't respond to several interview requests. The Plain Dealer, like most newspapers, has been losing readers for years. Bill Gruskin of Columbia Journalism School says some days of the week are more popular and more profitable for a paper's owner. That's a big reason Advanced cut the Times-Picayune to just Sunday, Wednesday, and Friday.
If you're a big metro newspaper right now and you're looking to cut costs in order to stay afloat, going this route makes a certain amount of sense.
But industry analyst Ken Doctor thinks this is a bad idea long term.
They will probably kill off their products slowly.
Doctor says when Advance has cut back on print days elsewhere, it has also let go many experienced journalists. As for the Cleveland Reporter's campaign to save the daily print edition,
I think that it's a noble effort. It's not likely to work.
And when I asked Harlan Specter, another Plain Dealer reporter, if he thinks the campaign will make a difference, he paused and said,
"We hope."
An announcement on the paper's future is expected soon. I'm Dan Bobkoff for Marketplace.
And let's do the numbers. Stocks are mixed in global trading on this Cyber Monday, up 0.25% in Tokyo, down 0.4% right now in London. On Wall Street Friday, the Dow surged 173 points, or about 1.3%, to close back up above 13,000 at 13,009.
Get Marketplace's top headlines, podcasts, and special features delivered right to your inbox each day. Subscribe to the Midday Update newsletter at marketplace.org.
Now to the UK and an invention that would make Willy Wonka proud. Cadbury, which is now owned by Kraft Foods, has developed a chocolate that doesn't melt, even in 104-degree heat. Marketplace's Stephen Beard joins us live from the Marketplace Chocolate Desk in London with the details. And Stephen, why are they doing this?
Well, Kraft describes this product as temperature tolerant. As you say, it'll withstand a heat of 104 degrees Fahrenheit for up to three hours without melting. This, they say, makes it an ideal product for hot countries, especially less economically developed ones where chocolate tends to suffer in the supply chain. Kraft thinks it will market this product in warmer countries like India and Brazil.
And what does it taste like, Stephen? Have you tried it?
No. A taste might be a problem. If it doesn't melt under 104 degrees, it won't melt easily in the mouth. So rival
true.
Chocolatiers, and in fact Kraft also, say this won't be as tasty as conventional chocolate with a lower melting point. For this reason, Kraft says it won't sell the product in cold countries like the UK. There's no point. However, critics of the Kraft takeover of Cadbury have attacked Kraft over this new bar. A conservative member of parliament says this is what we said would happen. We innovate and we don't get the benefit of that innovation. He says Kraft reneged on its promise to make British chocolate for British people.
Marketplace's Stephen Beard in London. Thank you.
Okay, Jeremy.
And finally, to last week's Macy's Thanksgiving Day parade in New York City, where there was something odd about the confetti. It was covered in Social Security numbers, addresses, and police records, even some information about where Mitt Romney's motorcade was headed for the final presidential debate. The explanation, according to WPIX-TV, the shredded pieces of paper appear to have come from the Nassau County Police Department, which says it is launching an investigation. In New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson. This is the Marketplace Morning Report. This is APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.